In any event, my name's Marie Bolts, and I'm from Penn State, and I have the wonderful task of talking about mixed methods research. And so what we're going to focus on today is a review of the basics of qualitative research, which might be somewhat boring for some of you, and really what it is and the purposes and how, what might be the sources of data, how we evaluate validity, otherwise known as rigor in qualitative research, and then again the basics of mixed methods research, including where do we use mixed methods, some of the designs, including a few examples, and some best practices that are derived from NIH guidelines. So when we think of qualitative research, we're really looking at insight, as opposed to establishing that really concrete or linear empiric knowledge. We're looking at insight. So we're asking broad general questions using inductive reasoning, and we're collecting detailed views of people, participants, might be patients, might be families, might be staff, because we're looking at a central phenomenon. So quantitative, we're concerned with predicting or explaining, maybe association between variables, intrinsic factors within a patient, or how an intervention will predict an outcome. In qualitative, the focus is on a phenomenon, the lived experience of having delirium, or the experience of a nurse who's taking care of someone with delirium. So it's really trying to understand the why, not the X influencing the Y, but the why. So it's a deep dive into the why or the phenomenon. And Donna said that I really need to compare and contrast qualitative to quantitative, so I'm doing that. So with qualitative research, we're asking probing questions, whereas quantitative is limited. Sample size is small in qualitative. The information per the respondent tends to be a lot, whereas it can vary due to burden on the patient. The administration requires a skilled researcher in qualitative. So the researcher really is the mechanism of research. And there's less specialist skills required in quantitative. The analysis is subjective and interpretive, whereas in quantitative, it's statistical. It's exploratory research, and quantitative is descriptive or causal. So what are the types of problems that are suited for qual research? When you're exploring a subject when you don't know much about it, this is a new area. You know, so much of the HIV and AIDS research was derived from qualitative work. That's where we really learned that this cohort of men in San Francisco were experiencing these terrible, terrible infections and what the experience is like. It's also used when you want to grasp the meanings and the motives and the reasons and the patterns that we can skip or miss or can be obscure in our quantitative findings. So I'd like to ask you, what type of problems do you think can be approached this way with qualitative research? So a good qualitative purpose statement includes a single sentence, the purpose of the study, and then we go to the central phenomena. And we use words instead of examine or predict. We use words such as explore, understand, and discover. And here's an example. The purpose of the current exploratory study was to describe examples and qualitatively derived themes of nurse-facilitated, person-centered care for hospitalized older adults with dementia and delirium. So what are the approaches? Well, the most common approach that we might see within this room is the qualitative, descriptive approach, which discovers and describes the who, what, and where of events or experiences. So that's what we would find in our focus groups in many cases. These interviews can be also in person, so individual or group interviews. or open-ended questions or surveys. They can be a narrative, which looks at the life of an individual using interviews and documents. There can be phenomenology, which is really looking at the lived experience. Whenever we hear the word lived experience, we tend to think phenomenology, small studies, 5 to 10 people. Grounded theory, where we investigate how inductively theory is derived about a phenomenon. And that happens through an iterative series of interviews. And often the interviews lead us in a different direction, and we follow up. And often the sample changes in response to the responses that we get. Ethnography, think culture. Cultural patterns and perspectives of participants and their natural settings. Most commonly represented in anthropological and sociological studies, but more and more in healthcare studies. And we're currently engaged in an ethnographic observation of clinicians administering a delirium tool. So we're really looking at what is the context of administering that tool, what's the interaction between patients and the clinician, and other factors. A case study examines the characteristics of an entity, a phenomenon, or a person, looking at documents, records, interviews, observations, and artifacts. So how do we select people? We ask the question, can the people and the sites help us learn about our phenomenon? So it's purposeful. It's purposeful selection. And it can also be purposeful quota selection. So if we're looking at family caregivers, for example, people who have dementia, that's our purposeful setting. And we might want that within spousal caregivers. But we might decide that there should be a quota of X amount of men, X amount of women. We also have to consider how many do we have to study, do we have access, and the typical, do we have permissions. Our sources of data will include interviews, either in groups or one-on-one. They can also be conducted online. We conduct observations. It can be as a participant or as an observer. Documents, and AV materials. Some qualitative work has really looked at Facebook data, which is very interesting these days, and even text messages. So how do we observe? We want to create an observational protocol and record descriptive notes and reflective notes. And what do I mean by reflective notes? Why bother with reflective notes? Donna?
Yeah, you would put me on the spot when you're...
Yeah.
Yeah, because...
Well, what do we bring to a study?
Because from the first point, you in qualitative research, you are the tool. You're part
you're
of the instrument. And so, though you want to be very careful about describing what you see, you also want to be able to reflect on that. But you should keep those two separate.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
You should work. So things that I bring to a study are based upon my gender, my past experience working with people with delirium or dementia. So I really need to record my responses to the situation so that I can, as Donna said, compartmentalize that and put it aside and help avoid bias. I want to enter the site slowly and get the feel of the land. I want to conduct multiple observations and summarize at the end of each observation. This is not data that can wait. I want to decide on the type of interview, and I want to create an interview protocol, which includes the who, what, when, where, very similar to the quantitative protocol. I'm going to include open-ended questions, and I'm going to tape record. And then have it transcribed for analysis. So I don't think that you can see this very well, but on your slide you can see that when I conduct these interviews, whether it's in a group fashion or one-on-one, I want to record the date, the time, the case number, or the participant. I also want to begin with a question that is an icebreaker, that is not very sensitive, and then move on to the specifics of the question. So the coding process. This is one of the things that really tends to sort of make people anxious when they're new to qualitative research, right? How do we code? Well, before we code, we certainly want the interview transcribed, and then we want to consider setup. And this sounds like minutia, but it's really important. So when I take my data, I want to make sure that I have a column on the left that's 1 inch wide where I can code, and then a 2-inch column on the right where I can record themes. And it's really a good idea to listen to the tapes initially as you're reading through the data so you can get a sense of the data. And then you want to determine what the person is saying and establish the meeting unit. What's the essence? What are salient points? And that can be in a paragraph or a phrase. Be very careful of the word and, A-N-D, because it often means that there's more than one meeting unit. So we then look for overlap among the codes, and then we establish themes, which may be based upon the setting. They may be what you would expect or would not expect. They can be related to each other. And from that, when they are related, we can create a conceptual map. So we go from many pages of text to many segments to 30 to 40 codes, often cut them down to 20, and then reduce those codes to 5 to 7 themes. Timing isn't good, is it? So how do we report the qualitative findings? We want to describe the setting, identify and discuss the themes, including multiple perspectives. We want to use in vivo codes, which represent quotes, and often metaphors or analogies are represented in the data, and they're the things that we want to pull out, the voice of the person. This writing is difficult. I started out doing only quantitative research, and let me tell you, qualitative is much more difficult. It's intensive writing, and it tends to be more literary. We want to report the narrative consistent with our approach. So descriptive will often have categories. And in conducting focus groups, which evaluate an intervention, they typically will include things such as barriers as well as facilitators. The narrative, quite simply, is a chronology, phenomenology, builds towards a crescendo where you describe the essence of the phenomenon. Ethnography heavily emphasizes the setting and the cultural themes, that is the shared norms, shared attitudes and beliefs. And grounded theory creates categories of information very similar to descriptive qualitative work, but they tend to be linked to build a theory. And then the case study is a description of the case and themes of the case. So how do we evaluate whether or not this work is valid? What we call in qualitative world rigor. We establish trustworthiness through member checks, taking our results and sharing them with the participants to make sure we got it right. We also look for some evidence that doesn't quite jive with the rest of the data. And we use triangulation, which is multiple sources, multiple data sources. The more we can combine, for example, chart record audits with interviews, the better. We also use thick description. So we have a lot of words. Confirmability is collection of data that allows for audits, so the use of audio recordings and full transcriptions. We also want to avoid putting our own subjective views. So we collect low inference observational data. So for example, instead of saying the patient was extremely stressed and grieving the loss of her husband, we want to describe instead the patient presentation. The patient was tearful and describing that she missed her husband. We also want to have a team approach, so a qualitative researcher does not code and enter themes in isolation, but works within a coding team. And we create an audit trail from the very beginning that describes how we made the decision on the purpose of the study and how we made the decision around sampling and data collection analysis. And then with reflexivity, we want to document our beliefs, also what our past review of the literature told us, and what are some of the theories that are underlying the study. And journalists engage other perspectives. Now, we use the term in qualitative research, transferability, which in quantitative world means, is this generalizable? So this really, is incumbent upon us to describe the setting and sample so that when this study is perhaps repeated, we're very clear on who it was provided to and in what setting. We tend to have low transferability in most qualitative work. These are some of the software packages available. And as Donna said, one of the things we need to be careful of is relying on software to analyze the data, because in the qualitative research arena, the researcher is the person who analyzes the data. But these are some of the software packages that are currently used. One of the ones that I have found very helpful is MaxQDI, because it really helps us create hierarchical themes. It helps us put the themes together and then break them down. So if we're looking at anxiety, perhaps, as a theme, there could be sub-themes underneath that, such as themes related to diagnosis, themes related to family relations, etc. Another powerful software package is Deduce. If you're collecting data, survey data that has open-ended questions. So we use this in a study where we have thousands of hospital staff responses around the care environment. And we were able, through Deduce, to link the quantitative data in those surveys to the qualitative data. So it's very powerful for mixed methods. So let's move on to mixed methods. Are there questions or something? Yeah.
Something I've been struggling with is, how do you understand when you've reached theoretical saturation? Like, how do you know when to stop? Like, I feel like these go on.
When you keep hearing the same thing over and over again. Excellent question. So mixed methods.
But before you move on, then, how about transferability? You said you tend to have low transferability. Can you elaborate on that? Like, are you satisfied with that, or is it just a reality that can't be changed?
It's a reality that can't be changed. And it actually, when you're taking a deep dive into a phenomenon, you tend to look at a very select, purposeful population. For example, if you're collecting, data around caregivers of people who had renal transplants who are African American, you can't transfer that to another population. And there would be a theoretical basis on why you would select urban-dwelling African-Americans. So you really want to take a deep dive. And in taking that deep dive, you not necessarily can transfer it. So when we think of this issue of mixed methods, we're really considering that combining qualitative and quantitative data gives us a better answer to a research problem. So the methodology of quantitative and qualitative is really valued equally. But we also have to consider that there's a philosophical perspective that's very unique to mixed methodology, as opposed to purely an empiric or a positive view. That is that facts and data really are very clear and all important. And also the constructivist view of qualitative work, which is much more exploratory and inductive. Mixed methods is pragmatic. Mixed methods is about getting to the answer, by using multiple data sources. It's important to remember, though, that it needs to be linked to a theoretical framework. So if I'm conducting research in delirium that's looking at intervention, I really need to consider Inouye's model of risk for delirium. If I want to incorporate an intervention that promotes staff knowledge or caregiver knowledge, I might use Bandura's theory of self-efficacy. So theory is very, very critical. I also will use multiple methods, or could use multiple methods, including focus groups, including observations, including review of artifacts. So here are five essential characteristics. We're using both quant and qual to address the questions. We're using rigorous procedures. We're combining the findings or integrating them. And we're developing procedures in which the collection, analysis, and integration occurs. And we're also using theory and philosophy. So here are some examples. The first example is the convergent design, also known as the combined design. We simultaneously collect qualitative data and quantitative data. So perhaps we can administer a survey tool that has open-ended questions. Or we can conduct clinical data collection, things such as CAM, genetic gait and balance, and then simultaneously, or during that process, during that encounter, collect interview data. That data is then merged and interpreted, and then we compare the results. So here's an example from a study that we conducted where we found in previous studies that fear of falling was very much linked to functional decline during the hospital stay. So we wanted to understand some of the reasons why. So we collected quantitative data, looking at intrinsic characteristics around health. We also evaluated fear of falling, depression, cognition, the typical things we see in acute care study with older people, including gait and balance. At the end of that assessment, we collected data using interviews, which explored the patient's views of the factors associated with fear of falling. And what we found in this study was that fear of falling was associated with depression using our quantitative data. So the patient characteristic associated with fear of falling was depression. The qualitative data supported that, because people said things like, you know, when I'm feeling sad, you know, I tend to fear falling. So it definitely converged around that. But we also found something extra, wherein family and staff influence fear of falling. And staff warnings and admonitions to patients not to get up, and families who were saying, I don't want him to fall, were definitely an influence around fear of falling. Here's another type of approach, which is the explanatory sequential design, where in phase one, we collect quantitative data, and we look to explain that data by then going on to collect qualitative data and interpret it. And in this study that looked at fear of falling and changed functional ability following hip fracture, quantitative data included fear of falling, self-efficacy around falls, avoidance of activities, functional ability, and activities at fear of falling. The qualitative data included in-depth interviews of 4 participants. So we went back, or the authors went back after this quantitative data was collected and took a deeper dive with four people, to understand the results. So the quantitative data established that fear of falling was associated with decreased ADL and mobility. And the qualitative data found that fear of falling, in addition to having that association, also reduced functional ability and seriously altered people's lives. So it helped to expand on that data. And then we have an exploratory sequential design. This was actually dissertation work that focused on factors influencing perceptions of nurses around quality geriatric care in rural hospitals, because we haven't done a really good integration of geriatric models in rural settings. And the first phase involved interviews with staff and administrators around their perception of quality. And what they found in that, in those semi-structured interviews, was that some of the factors that were important to improving quality around care was RNs getting along with one another, also staffing utilization, technology, and physician to nurse interaction. The quantitative data, which used a tool called the Geriatric Institutional Assessment Profile, confirmed this. And when they conducted matrices that compared the quantitative to the qualitative according to demographic cohorts, they found that education and roles were a factor. So the people who had the lowest perception of quality were staff nurses, opposed to people in administrative positions, and also people of lower educational levels. So here's an example of intervention in mixed methods design. So the first type of approach is the qualitative interviews conducted before the experiment, which some of you are doing. So an exploratory sequential design, wherein we recruit participants, develop interventions, and develop good pre and post measures. So we establish what we're going to be looking at as outcomes. The second approach, the convergent design, remember happening at the same time, occurs during the experiment, where we examine people's experiences and then modify the treatment. So it can be very much embedded within the MOST design. And then the third is qualitative interviews after the experiment, wherein we explain the outcomes and modify the intervention. And this is an example, I think some of you have worked with Dr. Siddiqui. This was an intervention within nursing home settings, which was a complex intervention to prevent delirium. And again, theoretically, it drew upon Dr. Inouye's work to make sure that the intervention addressed the risk factors associated with delirium occurrence. And as you can see, they started out with a review of the literature, and then they met in work groups within the nursing home and actually looked at getting feedback around the intervention. And then they established pre and post designs, and the quantitative review included surveys, also, I'm having trouble seeing myself, questionnaires, education sessions using quantitative forms, also patient care technician data and study documents. But the qualitative investigations included interviews with staff, including post-interviews, focus groups. They kept a log, the practitioner included a log, and they also looked at study documents. And what the result of the study established feasibility in diverse facilities, but it also led to the modification of the intervention. So they established within this work that the traditional approach towards PowerPoints being applied at certain times of the day would not work, and that there needed to be more one-on-one interventions, and that this type of education needed to be supported by champions. So they also established in this work that what was important to the care facilities as an outcome was hospitalizations. So they planned to implement this intervention and establish effectiveness. So let's look at writing an R grant. This is an excellent website, NIH website, that really walks you through what needs to be included in your grant application. And it addresses the theoretical and conceptual orientation, integration, aims, innovation, how you're going to validate both quantitative and qualitative data, and also what is your team composition? Is there someone on the team that is an expert in qualitative research? And they also address how publication should be represented. And here's an example of how theory can inform a design. So in this particular study, the overarching theory, which looked at the uptake of delirium screening, used the theory of behavioral change. So initially, the researchers collected and analyzed quant data from 250 surveys. They measured behaviors associated with delirium screening, and they also analyzed this data descriptively and multivariately based upon the characteristics of the reviewers. Then they collected qualitative data in a smaller sample, interviews with hospitalists. So they went back and looked at what was surprising and conducted interviews. They then interpreted how the qualitative results helped explain the quantitative results. So your study aims, you want to state an overall goal that addresses the overarching problem or question. It needs to address multiple levels of influence, theory development and testing, process and outcomes, context and meaning. The goal should inform, just like in quantitative research, the specific aims and questions. The order of the aims need to be very congruent and consistent with the research strategy. So they need to be very much aligned. And you need at least one aim that calls for integration. So a quantitative aim, a qualitative aim, and an integrative aim. For example, here's an aim associated with integration. Understand the treatment outcomes within the context of the treatment process. So you can see you have the quant outcomes, process is qual, which requires an integrated mixed method approach. And if you're addressing the aim sequentially, you want to list them in chronological order. So the template that is recommended for an explanatory sequential design, for example, starts out with a quant aim, a qual aim, a mixed methods aim, and then the aim for future research. Does that make sense to you? So relate personal isolation to depression in older adults based on survey. Explore that, the word explore, associated with qualitative, using interviews. And then the mixed method is to explain how personal isolation affects depression by obtaining personal experiences. Innovation needs to be addressed. Is this the first, has there been prior research using fixed methods in this area? And are any new tools and products that will be part of this? We want to introduce the mixed method research and the specific design, provide a definition and site studies. This is an important slide. We want to also name specific mixed methods designs being used in site studies. So take a dive in the NIH reporter and find other studies that have used mixed methods and explain the rationale and provide a diagram of the overall quant and qual procedures. And this is an excellent resource that is at the end of this presentation on ANCOVA. And you want to create a table that outlines the sample procedures and strategies for each of the study aims. You want to describe the validity for both quantitative and qualitative, so they both need to be addressed. And you also need to have a plan to resolve differences when there is a discrepancy between quantitative and qualitative results, which would mean pulling in a consultant researcher who would help with that. Integration can happen during data collection, during data analysis, and data interpretation. So here are some examples that you can look at later. Integration will involve merging the results so that a comparison can be made. Integration will involve connecting the results from the initial quant to plan for follow-up qual. And integration will involve gathering initial qual data, analyzing it, and then using the qual site results to build a new intervention. So this is a critical part of the grant application. In terms of publication, you want to start with an introduction. You want to have your aims in there for each methodology, including the mixed. You want to describe the methods, including a diagram. You want the results to report both quant and qual separately, and then the mixed methods results. Want to discuss the interpretation related to each of them. And if necessary, have appendices, including your instruments and your qualitative protocol, including your interview guide. In publishing, the convergent design should include methods separating quant and qual, the results separating them, and the discussion should describe the integration of them. In an explanatory sequential design, of course, methods quant first, then qual. And in the results and discussion, quant results to be explained, and then qual. An exploratory sequential, methods, qual, use of qual, quant, and the results and discussion, qual, use of qual, and quant. Here's a very good summary checklist that you may know about on the NIH website, which talks about, did you identify the basic methodology? Do you know the mixed methods design, how it might be applied? Do you have a diagram? Do you have advanced features of drawing the diagram? So is one of the final pieces include a timeline? And when each of these methodologies will be applied? Do you justify it? Do you specifically mention integration? Do you have very clear aims? And do you relate your mixed methods to your type of design? Do you have joint displays? Do you report validity for each methodology? Do you describe the mixed method skills within the team, including the qualitative? And do you give consideration as to how to form the team? And is there a conceptual framework? And you also want to consider up front, what are the multiple publications? Are you going to report quant separately from qual, and then mix them within a mixed methods approach? And you also want to use the recent guidelines on the NIH website. So that was